Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, August 13th, 2017. This is episode 1413. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Good to see you. Nice to see you. Thank you for joining me today. Leo Laporte here. I'm the Tech Guy, and this is a radio show for the next few hours where we just talk about tech, computers, and the internet. But more than that, really, I mean, these days, technology's everywhere, isn't it? It's pervasive. It's in your phone. In fact, I think for most people, the computer they use the most, their most useful computer, is their smartphone. It's not really a phone. It's not really a phone. It's a computer in your pocket. It's a pocket computer. But that doesn't sound as fun as a smartphone, a pocket computer. We got this computer on our wrist these days, smartwatches. They're not so smart. They're medium smart. They're kind of smart-ish. They're sidecars to the Harley in your pocket. What else? We got virtual reality, augmented reality, all sorts of stuff. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536 if you want to talk to me. 888-ASK-LEO. Outside that area, the U.S. and Canada, where it's toll-free, you can still call toll-free, but you have to use some sort of, like Skype or something to call that number. And I don't think Skype charges you if you call an 888 number. 888-ASK-LEO. The website, techguylabs.com. Love to hear from you. If you have a comment and you can't call in or you're shy and you want to talk about it on the website, you could do that as well. TechGuyLabs.com. I don't want to give them a free plug, but I'm going to anyway because T-Mobile now has a better deal for people over 55. I like that. Being of a certain age myself, finally a senior discount. It's interesting. I think T-Mobile probably, there's two reasons, right? One, because they do skew young in all their advertising and marketing, even their color magenta kind of speaks, you know, youth, right? They want the youths. But the other reason they want us old folks, and I think they've got it wrong, is they think we'll use less data on their all-you-can-eat data network, right? Oh, those people. Well, grandpa's only, you know, doing email and going AOL. So we're good with him. Yeah, well, he might surprise you. This grandpa here might surprise you. They also did something that, to my knowledge, no carrier is doing. Verizon has had the Droid, which is really just kind of a Verizon-branded Motorola phone. But it looks like T-Mobile's launching its own Android phone, and I have to praise them for this. We're not sure who makes it. The thinking is it's made by Alcatel, a French telecom. It's a nice Android phone. Not great, but decent. And they're going to charge, I think, $120. There's got a fingerprint sensor. It's got a decent screen. $125. Now, the real key for me, T-Mobile, if you're listening, I just gave you a free big old plug, okay? On national radio. But here's the key. If you want to keep and stay in my good graces, you got to do Android security updates. You got to keep them up to date. This is a big problem with inexpensive Androids all over the world. There are lots of Android phones out there, a billion or more, literally in use, a billion. But many of them are low-cost phones from manufacturers and carriers who don't want to bear the expense of pushing updates to you. You know, it costs them money. It's data. And so they're reluctant to. Now, I'm not talking about whether you're using Nougat or, you know, the late Android 7. You could be using Marshmallow Android 6. But the security patches are really what I'm talking about. Google puts those out monthly. They just put out the August security patch. And if you're not getting them within a month, if you are, you know, you're back on March, as many smartphones, even the expensive ones are, then you're at risk because it's just like Windows updates. And you know, I say all the time, you've got to do those Windows updates. Your Android updates are just as important. And it's not your fault. Companies, the cell phone companies, the manufacturers are not doing their part to push them out. So T-Mobile, here's a great opportunity for you to offer an inexpensive Android phone that's, it's running Nougat, Android 7.0, but let's keep it up to date. Could you make that promise? Every month when those Android security updates, you will push them to your customers promptly. Then I would have no trouble recommending this phone. None at all. I'd be thrilled to. Study on Instagram. Studied 168 individuals, 43,950 photos. They used, of course, machine learning to look at those photos. Of course, everything now is machine learning. And what did they discover? That they can reliably predict depression and other kind of emotional disorders, mental illness as well, through your pictures. They looked at the pictures. They correlated them with the subject's mental state. And then now they say they can predict and predict better than psychotherapists with a better result, a higher success rate. What are they looking at? It's interesting. It's of course, what they're taking pictures of. And darker colors, yeah, that's a negative mood. Happier folks prefer vivid colors. You would think that selfies, like would people take more selfies or fewer? What do you think? More selfies or fewer selfies if they're depressed? It turns out you take more selfies. It's not looking at whether you're happy or sad in the selfie, but the number of selfies. It's a fascinating study. I don't know if this bodes something for the future, but I wouldn't be surprised. We've seen people do this on Facebook. You know, university researchers, this isn't just Facebook doing it, looking at posts and so forth. And the idea would be, I think, and I think this would be a beneficial outcome, if Facebook could, you know, just kind of monitor everybody with machine learning, not with a human, but just, you know. And if you see some significant markers of depression, maybe offer up some content that would help. Referrals to suicide hotlines or therapy or that kind of thing. What do you think? Facebook has immense power now with 1.5 billion. Actually, it's 2 billion monthly users. 2 billion monthly active users. The daily users, though, is more than a billion every day. More than a billion people use Facebook, and they tend to use it for half an hour at a time. So that's immense power. Many people, if not most people, get their news now from Facebook. It's one of their primary news sources. As fewer and fewer people watch network news at night or read a newspaper, those seem like very old-fashioned things, don't they? I used to watch Walter Cronkite at night. People watch the network news if they're under 30? I don't think so. And nobody's reading newspapers, right? It may be online. Facebook becomes a big source of news. And now you have to wonder, I was talking about this with my wife this morning, if Facebook's going to take advantage of that. Mark Zuckerberg recently hired Hillary Clinton's political strategist for the 2016 campaign. Maybe, I admit, not the best resume builder, but this is a guy who's worked in politics as a pollster and as a strategist his whole life. He's now working for Mark Zuckerberg. Mark says, oh, I'm not running for president. No, I hired him for the charity. That's it. Yeah, right. But here's the question. Because he controls so many people in the U.S. and so many things, what they see, could he slant it towards himself and, in effect, throw the election to himself in 2020? With that, that's interesting. What would you think? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take your calls. Coming up next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. She can't help me with my life, unfortunately, but Kim Schaffer can help us with the phones. She's answering them right now in her climate-controlled booth. We must have turned the heat up. You're not wearing a blanket.
I start out like this.
Yeah, by the end of the day, you'll be bundled up in your jammies, in your footy jammies. So you've been answering the phones, I see.
I have.
Anybody exciting?
Yeah, well, I think we're going to go with a little Facebook question to start off today. Yeah, that Susan in Torrance.
Fits right in with the topic of the hour.
Yes.
Thank you, Kim Schaffer. Hello, Susan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. My question is, if you have all of your settings on Facebook set to private and friends only, can your employer see what you post? Do they have a way of getting in?
No.
Okay.
I don't blame you. This is a good question. And boy, young people should be asking this question too when you post stuff on Facebook. But remember the caveat that sometimes Facebook makes mistakes. And when you post something on the internet, my philosophy, and everybody I think should follow this, is to only post stuff, even privately, that you wouldn't mind if your employer saw. Because there's this risk. A few years ago, Facebook made a change to privacy settings, and all of a sudden, Mark Zuckerberg's private photos were visible. They fixed it about 6 hours later, but whoops. So if the founder and CEO of Facebook's private photos can be accidentally revealed by a change in settings, there's no guarantee. But unless it's really horrific, do you think your employer is watching you on Facebook?
No, I don't, but it was a debate we've been having at work about that.
Well,
because some people have seen that on the internet that they can.
What they're probably talking about, and you should inquire, companies, when you're on a company computer, the company has the right, and courts have upheld this time and time again, to spy on you. Everything from a camera over your shoulder to monitoring your internet traffic. It's funny because the law prohibits them from picking up the phone and listening in on your private conversations. You know, if your boss picked up the phone and you were talking to your mom, as soon as he realized it was a private conversation, he's legally required to hang up. However, you don't have the same protection with any of the internet traffic you do. And some companies go so far as to insert what we call a man in the middle between you and encrypted traffic to Facebook. So theoretically, the company could monitor your Facebook traffic when you're at work. Whatever you do at home, you're all right, unless you're using company equipment. If you're using company equipment, they may also put something on there.
No, I don't.
Yeah. So if you post at home and it's private from your home posting, it's relatively safe, barring an error on Facebook's part.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Good question. I hope you won the bet. It is important, though, and I would say if your company doesn't have an explicit written internet policy that includes what kind of information they collect on you, you should ask for it. They're not duty-bound to give it to you. The law does not say they have to. It's not spying. They can't put a camera in the women in the ladies' room or the men's room. They can't. You know, there's things they can't do. But when it comes to what you're doing on the internet, the company has free rein. They can read your email. Now, you might say, well, I use, use Gmail. It's encrypted, right? So I send the email from my computer and it's scrambled and then sent out over the internet to Google. So only me and Google and the recipient can see it. Well, mostly that's true, but often companies will use software that breaks that chain. And you can tell if they are, if you are careful, if you become a sleuth and look at the certificates. When you go to Gmail, look at the certificate in your browser and make sure it comes from google.com, not from your company, .google or whatever. What they would do is they'd set up your computer and they'd set up their network in such a way that you don't use the Google privacy certificates, the Google keys, to scramble your mail. You use the company's keys when the company then sends it along to Google. That, on the surface of it, doesn't look any different. You have to do a little investigating. But I really would, because of, you know, goofs Facebook's made in the past, and this is true, really, of Snapchat, and, you know, tell your kids this, too. Don't post anything up there that you wouldn't have grandma see. Because mistakes happen. Remember on Snapchat, people were using third-party Snapchat apps, which were then saving all the pictures and stuff? How embarrassing. The internet is essentially a public place. There's some privacy protections, but it's essentially a public place. Rick in El Cajon, California. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm well. I'm great. How are you?
Oh, we're doing okay down here. 104 degrees this past week.
Holy moly.
It's supposed to get cooler, so I think we're going to be moving up your way.
Yeah, we have a perfect climate here. Rarely gets that hot.
It's a God's country. Leo, about 6 years ago, I was following your program, and you had given a hint on Google's Pixis 3 program for photos to be on your computer. And Google has since dropped that. They don't update it. They don't supply any help with it. Is there some way that I can transfer all of the photos on that Pixis 3 to a Google current photo album type system?
Yeah, you're saying Pixis 3? Is this a phone? Yes. Is this? I don't know what that is. Picasso. Oh, are you talking about Picasso?
Picasso.
Thank you. Okay. Now, thank you. Winton translated. He's in the studio. Oh, he's talking about Picasso. Yeah. So what they did is they transitioned Picasso. Remember, Picasso was a third-party paid program, great photo editor and library. Google bought it, made it free, but then they discontinued it. And what they did is they basically moved Picasso Web, the website of Picasso, over to Google Photos. And I think the plan was to take the software and kind of incorporate it into the Google Photos online software. This was all back when they were doing Google Plus, and I think they wanted Google Plus to become, I don't know what they were. You know what? Google's strategy is often, I don't even think they know what they're doing sometimes. So this was a messed up strategy. There are other programs you can use like Picasa if that's what you want, but I think what I would probably do in your case is continue to use Google's online photos, photos.google.com, upload everything to it. One of the reasons you do that is because they have machine learning that can categorize it for you. A lot of the work we did in Picasa when it was on our computers was to organize our photos into folders and things. You don't have to do that anymore because kind of Google gives you the categorization. If you took a trip to Rio de Janeiro, you just search for all your Rio pics, and boom, they're there. Google does a very good job. You can even search for all the pics of your dog, your pictures of rainbows. It does a very good job of this. And so
that would be photosgoogle.com.
Photos.google.com. They have a desktop uploader that you can install on your computer, and you can say, just keep an eye on these folders. You know, your Windows Pictures folders for it. And upload anything I put there. Just start putting all your photos in that folder when you take, pictures with your camera. If you use a camera phone, as most people do, Google Photos on your phone will do that automatically. And it becomes really the ideal album. They've even got some pretty decent editing tools. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I wanted to mention one thing about Facebook. We were talking about, can your boss see your Facebook postings if they're private? No, assuming Facebook doesn't change things, which they have in the past from time to time. But there's another way you can leak information unwittingly. And it's not to your boss, so don't worry about that. But it is to maybe some, it's these Facebook quizzes. Have you ever taken a Facebook quiz, what Game of Thrones character are you? I love the how smart are you? How good a speller are you? And I see this all the time on my Facebook stream. All my friends, they especially Dr. Mom, she loves taking the how smart are you quiz. And that's fine and it's fun, but they're not purely for fun, as you might imagine, given how many there are. The companies that do those quizzes do them because when you take a quiz, suddenly you reveal everything that Facebook knows about you to that person. And in some cases, you also reveal, and this is the thing that bugs the heck out of me, information about your friends. Now, I don't know why Facebook allows this, but your friends' personal information can be revealed when you take a quiz on Facebook. So knock it off. You don't need to know which Game of Thrones character you are. And yes, you're smart. We know you're smart. So the quizzes on Facebook are a privacy leak. I guess that's what I'm saying. And so it's risky. If I could, I would not be on Facebook. Honestly, I don't get that much out of it. My family doesn't use it that much. I can call them. It's fine. And, you know, I don't need to know what my high school girlfriend is up to, although it's fascinating. Her son is named Leo. Now, she says that has nothing to do with me, but I choose to think otherwise. Sorry, Kathy. at least subliminally, I must have been there a little bit. I have to cover Facebook. I have to talk about Facebook to you, so I kind of feel like I have to use Facebook. But when if I should ever retire from this covering technology thing, which is probably unlikely, but I think one of the first things I'd do is take down many of my social media accounts. Those things, I don't even feel like they're good for us. I always feel a little unclean after using Facebook. How about you? I know you could. It's nice you stay. I look at my kids; they use it to stay in touch with college friends, high school friends. It is for them a way to stay in touch. I don't want to be in touch so much. It's an interesting conundrum because Facebook, and again, we were talking about Mark Zuckerberg running for president. It's hard for me. He seems like a nice guy. He seems like a benign guy. He seems like he would be a benign leader. I don't know how competent he'd be, but he seems like he'd be a benign enough leader. But seems isn't is. And if you think about Facebook's business model, it really is pretty straightforward. It's gather as much information about its users as they can. And they certainly encourage you to give them information, and we willingly do in return for the use of Facebook. It's free. Let's not forget the price we pay isn't in dollars. It's in personal information. Just remember, that's the price you're paying to use Facebook. And what does Mark do with it? Well, some of it's obvious. He sells ads. And by the way, I think in the next few years, it's going to become very apparent to every company that Facebook ads work better than anything else they're doing, including Super Bowl ads, including Google ads. Google and Facebook really are dominant here. And Facebook, because it knows so much about you, it's possible for an advertiser to do all sorts of things. Say, for instance, and you know this because you've seen this. Have you seen an ad that targets you specifically? I get them all the time. Meet 55-year-old women in Petaluma. I get them all the time, right? Hair loss solutions. And it always has my town in it, right? So what Facebook can do for an advertiser, and I don't care which advertiser you're talking about, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, or your corner store, to be able to target that accurately and know how with great detail who saw that ad and who clicked on it is worth a lot. When you buy television ads or radio ads on this show is a little bit better than a general television ad. When you buy this ad show, you're getting technology enthusiasts, right? So you hear a lot of technology ads on here. That makes sense. But when you're buying a TV show, CSI, you're buying the whole, basket of people, everything. And that's why it's big brands. It's car companies. It's beer companies. It's soda pop companies. But they have no way of knowing if their ads are working, if they're getting the right people, if they're, the efficiency of those ads is fairly low. When Ford buys an ad on the Super Bowl, it's reaching millions of people. How many of those people, though, are in the market for a car? How many of those people would consider a Ford? They don't know. The old saying, and it's true, I can't remember who said this, is I know half of my advertising works. I don't know which half. On Facebook, you know exactly who's seeing that ad. You control it exactly. You can control it in ways that you may not even think is okay. Remember, I was talking about how Instagram knows if you're depressed. So does Facebook. And Facebook will sell ads to an advertiser who says, I want depressed men in their 40s in Northern California. They'll do that. They can do all sorts of other things. If you're an advertiser, by the way, listen up. These are useful things. You can, if you have a mailing list for your business, and it's a mailing list of people who actively signed up, who said, yes, I want to know more about your business, Those are gold, right? Those people are gold. They are engaged. They are customers, and they're interested in more. You'd love to reach more people like that, wouldn't you? Well, you can go to Facebook and say, here's my mailing list. Here's all the emails I have. Facebook knows 90% of those people, right? Oh, yeah, we know, Leo. Yeah. And then what you can say to Facebook, I already reached these guys. I don't need to advertise to them. Would you advertise to a million other people just like them? Look at – so they're doing analysis on my mailing list and saying, okay, we know the kind of people who are interested in your business. Now, here's 100,000 more that don't know about you. That's gold. Those are the you're advertising people who are most likely to go back and take advantage of you, your ad and your business. That's gold. No one else can do that. Even Google can't do that because Facebook knows so much about you, even down to whether you're depressed, what your politics are. It's very useful for political candidates. It's the future of politics is Facebook advertising. Donald Trump spent very little money on media. He spent almost all of his ad money on Facebook to great advantage. You know, they point to all sorts of reasons why Trump won the election. My opinion, that's the way he won. And that was a very interesting effort. And I think every candidate, every future candidate, every politician looked at it and said, oh, and you watch. That's why it worries me, because who has access to all the content on Facebook? Mark Zuckerberg. Should he decide to run, he can pull all sorts of levers in very interesting ways. That actually worries me. If he decided he wanted to be president of the United States, he could do it. Really, the only question is, why would he? He might have more power as at Facebook than he does as president. Although they did change his stock about a year ago so that he could, if he took a government job, it says this explicitly, continue to run Facebook. 8888-ASK-LEO. More of your calls coming up right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The Reverend Al Green. 8888-ASK. Marvin Gaye. Al Green, Marvin Gaye. They're all the same. you're right. Marvin Gaye. What am I thinking? Mercy, mercy me. The ecology. He's a reverend too, though, isn't he, Marvin? Well, I know he's the late reverend. Is he not? His father was a reverend. His father, the guy who shot him, was a reverend. All right, never mind. I'm sorry I brought the whole thing up. Let's just forget it. moving. Now you know I am the tech guy, not the DJ guy. Now we go to the Netherlands, and I hope I'm saying your name right. Dom. Is that right, Dom?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Let me hear you say it.
I'm Dom.
Dom. Hi, Dom.
Hi. Good. Yeah.
Well, that's funny. That woke up my Amazon Echo.
I'm sorry about that.
It must have a little Dutch streak in it. What can I do for you, Dom?
Well, we have a cable system here at home, just, you know, as you have in the US, and we've been having lots of disruption in the signal. You know, the kind of digital distortion.
I hate that.
That's probably because we live right next to a 4G mast, so there's
maybe you know, the first thing to look at is everything from the point the cable gets to you inward. I had last night, I was trying to watch a American football game, and it was very annoying because it kept going bzz, bzz. And of course, what do? You go and you jiggle all the cables, you reconnect. Finally, I ended up turning off my AV receiver and turning it back on, and again, it fixed it. So something had gone wrong in the software of the AV receiver. My point being, it could be out there, but it also could be in here. And so you've kind of got to go through the whole chain. Easiest way to do that would be eliminate everything you can. Connect a TV, if you have a TV with a cable jack, connect it directly to the cable coming into the house and see if that's okay. If it's not...
Yeah, we tried that, indeed. It didn't work, though. We figured out what it is. Our house was built in the 90s, and back then they didn't have the same frequencies in the air as there are now. And the cabling in the wall actually isn't up to the standards.
Ah.
So there's radiation coming from outside the house. The cable is not...
Normally, when, you know, coax cable, the kind at least that's used here, and I would presume in the Netherlands as well, is shielded coax cable. But maybe, so they used a thinner cable or something that wasn't shielded.
Right, right. So that's the issue. We figured out that that's the problem.
Yeah, good.
And what we did is we bought a device called an HD Home Run. I don't know if you've heard of
it. I do, and I love it, from Silicon Dust, yeah.
Right, right, right. I love it, too. I use it upstairs to watch it through my computer, which I hooked up to my TV. But we would also love to use it in the living room. Right now, we have a normal set-top box from the cable company, but as I said, lots of disruptions in the video signal there. So basically, what I'm looking for is a device that we can hook up to the TV downstairs and watch TV through, something like a Chromecast or something like that. But, you know, ideally something with a remote control that we can use as a normal zapping device, basically.
So you want to hook up something that gets internet television on your TV, or that it connects to the
right.
cable? No, internet television.
That connects to the HD Home Run, so we can use the signal from there.
I think the HD Home Run has exactly that kind of thing, a base unit. And then you can use your Wi-Fi to you have your base unit upstairs. And I don't use an HD Home Run, but I know a lot of people in the chat room do. So I think it's called the Home Run Extend. And
we actually have the Extend.
Oh, okay.
And that's the device that just receives the signal from the cable company and turns it into a network stream.
Got it. But you can't use that on other devices? I mean, you can only use it on one at a time?
No, it has four tuners in it, so you can use four televisions at the same time, basically. But I'm looking for an easy device that will stream it to a television, basically, so that is something I can hook up to a TV and control with a remote control, not with an app, not through a program or anything like that. That will sort of natively work, basically.
So you almost, in effect, you want something like a Roku or a Chromecast, but instead of picking up Netflix, it picks up the HD Home Run.
Right, right, that's right.
Aha! Well, now chat room is going to help me here. That's an interesting thing. If for instance you used Plex, you could put Plex on your Roku, and then your Roku would be remote controlled and all of that stuff. It looks like somebody's posted in the chat room information, and it looks like you should be able to do exactly what you want to do. Home Run products, central device connecting live TV to multiple viewing locations. We stream to and through NVIDIA Shield, Roku, Fire TV. It looks like they support all of these. Now, I don't know. They must have a HD Home Run app. They do support Plex and Kodi and Windows Media Center. They're smart. These guys are smart. They've made it work with everything. Unfortunately, I don't see Chromecast on here. So it looks like it's something you have to be able to install their app on. If you're going to pick one streaming device, and if price isn't the object, I would get the NVIDIA Shield. It's an Android TV device that by itself is fantastic. I really like it. It's very powerful. It's got a very fast NVIDIA Tegra processor in there. And it has it can install other apps, including gaming apps. But if you want to go cheap, a Fire TV. It doesn't look like it does support Roku. But if it supports Plex, then you probably could put Plex on your Roku and make it work. But get a Fire TV stick. Do you have? I'm embarrassed to ask this question. Do you have an Amazon? And I know there's Amazon Netherlands. Do they sell the Fire TV there? That might be another question.
That's a good question. I would have to go and find that out. Yeah. I'm not too sure about
that. Amazon's funny. You know, a lot of the things Amazon sells are not available globally. Sony has an Android TV, Android phones, Android tablets, NVIDIA Shield. I like the NVIDIA Shield. I know that's sold in the Netherlands. But that's $200. It's expensive. So there are plenty of devices. Right. I'm looking. Apple TV, if you're in the mood to have Apple's iTunes store on your television with their movie rentals and their TV show rentals, that'd work.
Ah, I didn't know that would work because we actually have one, but I haven't looked on that yet.
It supports TV OS. So what I would say, well, that's the Apple TV OS. So what I would say is, and you'll have to look at the Silicon Dust website, but I would bet you there's a home run app that you would install on your Apple TV. So if you have an Apple TV, you're golden.
Oh, that's sweet. I'm going to have to try that out. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you for listening in the Netherlands. I appreciate it. Do you listen to the podcast?
No, I listen live. I'm actually looking at you right now through my Cody Power TV.
Nice. Oh, and you have Cody as well. Oh, you're
yes.
You know the answer to all these questions. You're just sandbagging, aren't you? You know.
No, I really didn't know about the Apple TV app. So that's
yeah.
Good for me.
Well, it also works with Cody. If you got Cody working,
I know. Yeah. I use it upstairs through the computer, but downstairs we don't.
Yeah, sounds like you have a pretty good setup. Dump the cable. Who needs the cable? Right?
Yeah, we don't have a good streaming provider in the Netherlands. Yet.
Where, interesting. Where are you in the Netherlands?
Near Rotterdam, actually.
Okay. And you can't get over the air signals?
No, there are a couple of providers that do that, but the signals aren't very good here. So.
Yeah.
Kind of rural.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. It's a pleasure talking to you. I call it Holland because I'm an old guy. I love the Netherlands. Beautiful country. And as always, with everybody I've ever met in the Netherlands, your English is better than ours. It's kind of amazing.
I don't know about that.
Certainly better than my Dutch. Nice to talk to you. Take care, Dom.
Bye-bye.
More of your calls still to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Good to see you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. We're going to spend the next hour or so talking high-tech, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. Chris Marquardt, speaking of digital photography, our photo guy. Chris is here, right, John? I think he's going to be here, in half an hour. And I think we're doing a photo review. So if you've submitted a photo illustrating joy, whatever that, it could be Regis Philbin's wife. It could be anything with joy in it. Then we will... That's an arcane fact, isn't it, that I know? I don't know why I know that. Actually, I do know why I know that. When I used to do every few months, I would go to New York and do Live with Regis and Kelly. Started in about 2001, continued doing that for about 10 years. And, in fact, I did it right up to when Regis retired. That was kind of when I said, well, Regis retired, I'm going to retire. But at one point, I taught him how to use Twitter. That was an experience. Not a touch typist. Old Regis Philbin, not, sweetest guy ever. I went up to his office. They filmed it. I went up to his office and I said, "Okay, Regis, we're gonna use Twitter." He knew what Twitter was, but they have people to do that. And he said, "Well, I want to do my own tweeting." So we did a tweet. It turned out the tweet that he did was, "I denounced my retirement." And he one character time. Typed it all out. I told him what to expect, and he pressed. I said, "Are you out? You read it? You're set? You got every press return?" He sent it out, and then, of course, immediately, especially with a tweet like that, he started getting a lot of responses. And this is how I know his wife's name, because he jumped on the phone and said, "Joy, Joy, go look at the Twitter. Go look at the Twitter." He was so excited. I don't know what happened. Maybe, well, it happens to all of us. Some of the responses weren't as happy as he. The initial responses weren't as positive, but anyway, by 2 weeks later, he'd quit Twitter. So there was a brief but shining 2 weeks. Sean in Toronto's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sean.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the show. Nice to have you.
Hi. Okay. I'm kind of on the fence for VR/AR, like, because. I don't know whether to. Well, maybe I'll start off by saying I've got all like Apple hardware at home.
Okay.
And I went to a guy's, our friend's place, and he has an Oculus Rift.
Ooh, did you get to play with it?
Yes.
And you loved it?
Actually, I really liked it.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty cool, right? And
unfortunately, none of the VR or AR stuff currently out works with Apple at all. None of it. You can't use Android Daydream. You can't use Samsung Gear. You can't use Oculus Rift. You can't use Vive. In fact, quite insultingly, the folks at Oculus Rift, I think it was Palmer Luckey, the founder of Oculus Rift, said, yeah, we're never going to do a Mac app. They just don't have very good video cards. And, it, you know, that true or not, it is somewhat true. Apple has not really paid a lot of attention to high-end video cards in the last few years. And the iPhone... Yeah,
the new iPhone 8 or whatever.
Well, the rumor has it that's going to be a big deal. Actually, it is not even rumor because Apple announced at the developers conference in June a new developer kit called AR kit. It's designed all around augmented reality. And there are already some companies using doing some augmented reality stuff with the iPhone. So it, according to Apple, whatever they do, this AR kit will work on any iPhone from 5S on. So you don't have to have the new iPhone. It'll work better with the new iPhone because the hardware in the new iPhone will be designed for it. But it won't be anything like your Oculus Rift experience. Your Oculus Rift experience, you put on a big old head visor with headphones in it, right? It was an immersive experience. And as you look around, you're in somewhere and you're looking around. Did you play a game or just did you do the demos with the aliens looking at you or you looked down?
No, I played a couple of games that he had. And one of them was like a scary game where
and you
fire, like it was kind of like a Call of Duty type thing. Well, it wasn't really Call of Duty.
But it's knights and swords.
Yeah, and it was kind of really cool, right?
It's a really fun game, and it's terrifying. I've had the skeleton jump out at you, and it feels like there's a skeleton. Yikes! It's scary. So a couple of things I would say.
Well, then basically I'm wondering, is this AR kit going to take over VR?
No, it's not going to do that. It's not going to do that at all. There's no helmet. Oculus now has touch paddles. There's no controller. What it's going to do, this is what Apple's AR kit is going to do. You hold up your phone, and you're looking at a scene through the camera, and on top of it is stuff. One of the first apps that was announced, IKEA, the furniture company, they're going to make an app where you look at your room, and you can say, well, show me what the IKEA Frum Bum Fum set looks like in there. And then it will superimpose it and you can walk around and see how it would look in your room. That's not the same thing. I mean, it's a, from the technology point of view, it's a similar technology. From the end user point of view, it's a very different thing. And I know what you, sounds like what you want to do is those games.
Yeah, well, I thought that was really cool because, and I'm thinking that, well, maybe if I hold off, maybe Apple will do the same thing.
Yes, maybe.
It sounds like,
well, we don't know. They haven't announced anything like that. And because they don't, the VR that you did, the Oculus VR you did, requires an NVIDIA, a fast NVIDIA graphics card, faster than anything Apple sells in its, any, even if it's best computers today. I think maybe when the new iMac maybe has enough horsepower to run it, but nobody's making software for it because it's just that one computer. So, you know,
because I'm on the fence, like whether
I don't blame you. Here's what I would look at. There's a couple of things you could do. If you got an Android phone, and you can get cheap Android phones, make sure it's Daydream compatible. And then for $100, you could get a Daydream, which is very much like the Oculus. It's not quite as compelling, but it's a visor you put on, and you get a little controller, and you can play games. Did you get sick at all? How long did you play?
Oh, I played for a good 25 minutes.
And you never got queasy or anything?
No. I thought it was really cool.
Good. That's good because some people, about 10% of everybody gets queasy. And if that's the case, you know, VR is not a very fun thing to do. Did you, when you took it off, were you a little disoriented?
At first, just a little bit, but it went away right away, not right away, but like a couple of seconds later.
Good.
Type thing.
So there's something called simulator sickness, which the Air Force has identified. They identified it years ago because pilots went in simulators to learn how to fly. And a percentage of the population, they estimated about 11%, gets this, that it can disorient you for as long as 24 hours. And if you're one of those people, you shouldn't even drive a car for the next day. But you're not, which is good. So you're a perfect candidate for VR. The problem is I don't see Apple doing it. Now, again, you could buy the newest iMac, but then there's still no software for it. It's going to come down to Apple getting somebody, Oculus or HTC, to make the software for it. Now, I'm looking at the Apple page, and they say a virtual first for iMac. VR makes its debut. The ability to edit 360-degree video like in Final Cut Pro. And they show a picture of a Vive headset, and that's it. I don't see... I don't see anything else.
Editing and actually playing.
It's different. Let's see here. There's a footnote. Let's go all the way down to the bottom. Footnote 6 requires Mac OS 10 Sierra Radeon 580 graphics. It's really they're Final Cut editing support will be coming later this year. See, Apple's not the platform for VR if you want to do VR. There are VR things you can do with Android. But a lot of us ended up doing, I did, buying or building a high-end Windows machine. I bet your friend that's what he has.
Yeah,
that's disappointing. It's disappointing. I know. You want to do it, and you're an Apple guy, and this is the way it is. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So it's possible down the road when you get the new iMac Pro, maybe HTC will make stuff available for it, but there's no guarantee. And I feel like, gosh, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, first of all, none of that's available now.
Well,
Sean,
you mentioned some phones that could do it too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, any Android phone, although it's best with the newest Android phones. Samsung has their visor they call the Gear VR. That's $99. And then Google sells one called the Daydream, which I think is roughly the same cost. And that.
How would you compare it to the Oculus Rift, though?
Well, the Samsung is Oculus. They work with it. That's the same technology. I don't think it's as immersive or as good as the Oculus. But it's close, and it's a lot cheaper than buying a $1,500 PC. To do your Oculus Rift, you've got to have a PC, a minimum $1,000 PC, plus the $500 Oculus Gear stuff. So you're talking $1,500 to play that game. I think you should just go over to your friends more often.
Yeah, I think I might do that.
You can. There is something called Google Cardboard.
You just have to bring more beer to them. Like.
Yeah, exactly. It's more fun with somebody else anyway. But, it's going to be – it's possible you'll be able to do it if you get a newer Mac. But I wouldn't rush to get a newer Mac until you see all of that stuff emerge.
Yeah.
It's disappointing, okay. I know, but I think most of the people who want to do this stuff end up buying a PC or building it.
Sorry.
Look at Google Cardboard. You can do that on an iPhone. That's basically a non-interactive 3D that you look around in. It's not a game. Really, the best gaming is on Oculus or HTC's Vive. Sorry.
Okay, then. Thank you very
much. Take care. Bye-bye. This is a very common complaint with Apple users. It's not a gaming platform. Actually, Lawn Dog, yeah, Microsoft announced that they were going to do a special chip for the HoloLens that is machine learning, offloading for AR. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I wish I had a better answer for that. There's no way that I know of to do modern VR on a Mac. And Palmer Luckey, formerly of Oculus, said there never will be. He got a lot of heat for that. But it's, this has always been the problem with Apple in general, is it's not been great for high-end gaming, great for casual gaming. iOS is easily the best platform for casual gaming. You know, Words with Friends and Field Runners and stuff like that, but it's not not for high-end gaming, and the Mac is not for high-end gaming. Apple, it's hard for me not to be dismissive of Apple at this point. I've stopped buying Apple computers, to be honest. They don't really want to be in the computer business. I'm sorry to say, but that's obvious. It's obvious, despite all their protestations. Oh, we're all in on the Mac. They don't want to be in that business. They haven't for a long time because they make so much money on the iPhone. It's very hard for a company when you have a hit product like that not to just put everything in that basket. And which is, it's a little strange because if you're going to write software for the iPhone, you need a Macintosh. But so there's a market for sure. And of course, inside of Apple, everybody uses a Macintosh. They just, I don't know what's going on over there, but they have really flopped. Their latest hardware, the MacBook Pros, absolutely second rate, way overpriced. There's much more variety and choice on the PC side. Now, I'd prefer to use Mac OS, but in the face of this mediocre hardware at a very high price and a dearth of applications in some areas, particularly high-end gaming, it seems like the only choice would be to go over to a PC. My personal preference, not a big fan of Windows either. So I use Linux, the free open source operating system on most of my PCs. And I find actually Linux these days is easier to use than ever before. Yes, I hear you, Chris Marquardt. You're working. Chris Marquardt's our photo guy. He'll be joining us in a few minutes. I don't want to go off on a diatribe against Apple. I love Apple. I bleed rainbow colors. And I have ever since the Mac came out. It was a revolution. At some point you can't, denial has to, the scales have to fall from your eyes and you have to admit the truth. Here is a company that's lost its way and, or if they found the way, but it's not the way I'd like them to go. Maybe that's a better way to say it. They know where they want to go. iPhone. And, maybe they can convince you to buy an iPad instead of a laptop iPad, but not Mac. And, this is a perfect example. Everybody's all crazy, gaga about virtual reality. You can't do it on a Mac. Right? Now, to be fair, you can't do it on Linux either. You got to have a Windows 10 PC. Bruce, Pasadena. Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Hey, Leo, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Hey, Leo, I'm having problems with Google Voice.
Uh-oh.
And I'm an old Google Voice user. I go back to when you had to get the invite to get it. And
yeah, me too. I was a Grand Central user before they bought it and turned it into Google Voice. Yeah. I love it. I've been all in. It must be 10 years now.
Yeah. It's great, except all of a sudden, as of last Thursday, when I dial out the other end, they don't get my Google Voice number anymore. They get private number. That's all that shows up. And I'm like, what? So I've reloaded the app 2 times and it's still doing the same thing. Any suggestions?
Well. And you've looked at the settings, because I know there is a setting. Maybe that's what happened. And I think with Android, it changed. Where it does it tell you your phone number or not. This also maybe, and one of the things that screwed up Google Voice is Google Fi. So Fi is Google's cellular company. They buy bandwidth from T-Mobile, Sprint, and U.S. Cellular. They bundle it together, and they sell you a phone with a Google Fi chip. They're my carrier on my Google Pixel phone. And what happened, as soon as I signed up for Fi, they said, okay, this is a one-way street. We're going to move your Google Voice number over, and voice is going to, change a little bit. Fortunately, I've figured out, it's not easy, how to get to Google Voice. If you go to voice.google.com, once you're a Fi customer, it sends you to Fi, and you have to go to the very bottom of the page, and the little tiny print, it says, go to Google Voice. And then you can go to Google Voice. All the settings are there. But they have changed some things for Google Voice users. For instance, Hangouts used to be able to send and receive text messages at your Google Voice number. They stopped doing that. You can only do that if you're a Fi customer now. SMS no longer works with Google Hangouts. And I'm wondering if this number thing is related to that. So I'm pretty sure, and I should look, but I'm pretty sure there's a setting that says what number to use when you call from Google Voice. Remember, for people who don't know what Google Voice is, it's a service that gives you a new number, a Google Voice number, that you can then have all your phones ring. But when you're calling somebody from a cell phone, it could either identify that cell phone's number. You probably don't want that, right? Because that's your that's your secret number. You want it to say your Google Voice number. I, you know, it may be that what they've said now is, well, it'll either identify the hardware phone number, the cell phone number, or no number, but you can't say the Google Voice number anymore unless you call via Google Voice. Now, you can do that if you use Hangouts. Do you use Hangouts? Mm-hmm. And make a call via Hangouts, it will use your Google Voice number, and then it will identify you as a Google with a Google Voice number.
Okay. Okay.
So I think this is related to Fi. They've subtly changed how Google Voice works, is I guess the bottom line. And it may be that it no longer does the caller ID the way you want it to do, that you have to use Hangouts to make the call. If you use Hangouts to make the call, it'll say you're using Google Voice, and then it will use your Google Voice number as a caller ID.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Great.
Okay.
Great.
I think
Thank
that's what happened. Much. I think they just – they, and it makes sense. Private or the actual hardware, you know, phone number. But if you want to use a Google Voice number, you got to use the Google Voice data calling service. I think that – I guess that makes sense. And maybe that's what happened is Google said, well, the way we're doing it, it's complicated. You know, here's an – okay, I was just ragging on Apple. I'll be fair now. Google is not – I love Google. I use their services. Somebody was saying – I saw on – maybe it was on Reddit. Oh, just for giggles, try not using Google for a week. Well, good luck. It's not – for me, not possible. I could not use – you know, I could easily not use Google Search. I'd use some other search. But there's all sorts of services I use, including Google Voice, Google Mail, Google Docs, that I couldn't stop using for 1 minute, let alone 1 week. Nevertheless, they drive you crazy. They keep changing things. Now they've got messaging built into YouTube, as if Google didn't have enough different ways to message. No, there's no coherent strategy at all. It's kind of the opposite of Apple. Do everything. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, now let's try it again. Hey, Chris Marquardt. Oh, he's gone. All right. So, Dr. Mom, I thought they said they deprecated SMS. No. Yeah, this is exactly what I said, Dr. Mom. If you use Hangouts as your text messaging app, switch to another text messaging app. If you are using Google Google Voice and Project Fi, you can send texts, but only, but not as an SMS. You can't use it as SMS on your phone. Hi, Chris Marquardt.
Okay, this was totally on me. It should be much, much better now.
No more clicking.
Yeah, my computer had, well, my router in between, no, my hub, no, my switch in between the computer and the network had... for some reason, unplugged someone. I guess the cat chewed through the cable, so the computer went back to fall back to its Wi-Fi connection. Sorry for that. Weird things happen with networks.
I'm surprised it worked at all.
It's unplugged.
How did it work at all?
The Wi-Fi is okay.
Well,
in
the
here
Wi-Fi
usually,
kicked
but
in. I get it. I get it.
Well, it switched back. It fell back on a Wi-Fi that it shouldn't have. But anyway, I found the plug, and it was not where it should have been. Hey. Well, the joys of doing live audio and video.
Our cats do that to us all the time.
We have an assignment review. Do you have an email?
I didn't submit one. Send me an email.
No. It's on its way. What a day. I held a workshop over the weekend, so I've been like all over the place. No, I did send it. Hold on.
Okay. What was
am
the
I
work?
Saying?
Can you,
have
hear
it.
Me?
You have it.
Can you hear me, Chris?
I can hear you.
Oh, good. Okay.
I can hear you.
What was the workshop in?
The workshop was about image composition.
Fun.
2 days on image composition. Yep.
I see the assignment review. You are in my important folder.
That is nice to hear.
Yes.
I made it. You made it if you made it into Leo's important folder.
Yes. That means I don't want to miss any messages from you.
Which doesn't say anything because you could have a very important and a really important folder as well.
I do have a VIP folder, but that's like my mom, my wife.
Oh, okay.
It's very, very few people get in that folder.
Okay.
Oh, I don't have JavaScript. Must be enabled, and you need the latest version of the Adobe Flash Player.
Oh! The slideshow is gone. I think it doesn't work in Chrome anymore.
That's right, because Chrome used to have Flash built in.
I don't think they do anymore. The other place you also need Flash is if you want to watch some video on a BBC UK website.
They really got to stop doing that. That's ridiculous.
This is 2017. I mean, who does that? Well, I mean, I'm happy that Flickr gets some attention at all, because I don't know, probably one guy working on that at this point. That's what it feels like sometimes. Oh, well. It's still around, and I think we'll use it as long as it's here. So, three images to look at. Ooh, and the IRC connection dropped.
Chrome stopped bundling Flash, so you have Flash installed, folks. The folks who are getting Flash, that's because you installed Flash. But I ain't installing Flash. Mama, don't take my code to Chrome. Yes, it's that time once again. We missed him last week. Chris Marquardt is back. He's our photo guy, host of the Tips from the Top Floor podcast, tfttf.com. Discoverthetopfloor.com for his fabulous workshops. You did one today. What was it on? Oh, hi, Chris.
Here in the Viewfinder Villa, we did a workshop on image composition. Very basic stuff. Image composition is something you can use for every photo you will ever take. So if you know what works, what doesn't work, why it works, if you know about some of the, well, I'll put them in air quotes, rules of photography.
You got to know the rules if you're going to break the rules, right?
There are not as many rules, though. Most of them are more suggestions than rules. I mean, we're talking like the rule of thirds and the golden spiral, and these kind of things are not really hard. Hard set rules, they're more like suggestions.
I was thinking about this the other day. You know, my wife, who is already a better photographer than I am, but is kind of new to it and is learning, has a great philosophy. She talks to every photographer, and we get a few come through the studio, and every time she meets a pro, she asks them a whole bunch of questions about their process, and she's a sponge. She's just learning like crazy. She spends –
it's cool.
Both of us, it's probably our primary hobby. It's really fun. And it's fun to learn from the best, like you, Chris.
And you know, the one thing that I find, especially on the workshops that we do here in the villa, is that people learn most by looking at photography and by looking at each other's photography. So I make a point in sharing photography here. People, I give them a homework before the workshop and ask them to bring their three best pictures, which get some into real trouble because they often haven't thought about that before. And then
I can tell you my three best right away.
If I asked, you do have three best.
Oh, yeah, I can tell you.
but a lot of people don't work this way. And then and then when you ask them, they start scrambling for
it's easier for me because I don't have that many good pictures. So the ones when I get a good one, I remember that one. So let's do that right now. Let's try it right now. For the last month, actually a little more, we've been asking people to take pictures illustrating the word joy. That's really a wide open subject. And then when they get a good one, upload it to our Flickr group, the tech guy group on Flickr. You've been looking at those, and you've picked a couple, three in fact, to talk about.
Yes, I did. And the interpretation, I have three different ones that I picked. One is something that brings joy. The other is a photo that shows something that looks like joy. And the third is something that I think is joy. So we have a lot of shots of kids and animals and people generally looking happy. But the first one I chose doesn't really show a person's face, and it's by Larry. And the title is All That Jazz. And you see an instrument. You see, I think it's a flugelhorn jazz instrument, like a trumpet. And one of these things, he has one of these plungers in the front that
uses
wah wah wah.
Yeah,
it's a mute. Yeah,
except it's actually a plunger.
Wah 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 sound. Yeah, right. It is a plunger. Yeah. They do use actual plungers for that.
Yeah, you can buy a mute, but why when you can get it at the hardware store for nothing?
Exactly. And music. Having played music myself, I know if you play music and if you do it well, that brings a lot of joy to you and to the people who are listening to your music. So joy and music for me are deeply, deeply connected. So that's why I chose that picture. It's a nice picture. The light is nice on it. The colors are beautiful. It's a detail shot.
That's what I like about it. He really got in close. I think a lot of times people don't get close enough. And he really
got in.
That's
one of
the
things we talked about on the weekend. Get in closer. Do yourself a favor. And if in doubt, get in closer. You will usually bring back more interesting photos. So that one is one of those examples. Great shot. Love it.
Next one is Pure Joy.
By Gerald Wiley, Pure Joy. And what you see is a dog running towards the camera on a meadow of sorts, and the look on the dog's face. I'm not an expert on dogs, so I don't know if dogs really smile or if that is just it being relaxed, it being whatever, but it looks like it has this big grin on its face and it looks genuinely happy on that picture. Is that what dogs do? Do you know?
Yeah, well, the thing about dogs, the reason dogs are great is they show emotion. When you're an actor, they tell you if you want to study emotion, study a dog. If you want to study relaxation, study a cat. Because cats, they don't really show any emotion, but they're very relaxed. Dogs, it's all about emotion. And yeah, that looks like a pretty joyful dog. That is no unhappy dog.
It doesn't look unhappy, that's for sure. And that's a great shot. I mean, just
I don't think
just
they
wonderful.
Smile exactly, but he's happy.
That's what I mean. I mean, they do show emotion, but the smiling, I think, might be something that we might interpret into that shot. But the third one, I mean, that's probably the purest joy that I've seen in a long time. So it's a photo of a girl in a dress. It's a black and white photo. The girl's wearing a dress, and it's spins around. It swirls around, so the dress, the skirt of the dress kind of bulges outwards, and she's completely in her own world. You can see that probably on a wedding or something. That's what it looks like. And she is so in her own world, so happy, just spinning around, and it's just...
Some of the best kid pictures ever are from weddings. I don't know why that is. But that really is
maybe
true.
Maybe because their parents are so relaxed, so they...
Yeah. And there are professional photographers present.
Which also sometimes helps, yes. It does. And I like how you see in the photo, you see the motion, not just in the dress, like the dress kind of spirals a bit, but also in her hands. You can see a bit of motion blur in the hands and in the hair. So that adds a bit of an additional kind of dynamics to the picture. And great.
And I like
great moment.
The photographer decided to make it black and white, which to me in a situation like this just really focuses on the person and the shapes.
It takes all the possible distractions from colors out of it. You can see some flowers in the background. They would probably be, I don't know, red or yellow.
Right.
That would catch a lot of attention. That attention is now totally on the girl. The girl is like central in the photo. And that's kind of how that one should be.
Good job, Chris. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's three photos from this month's assignment, but you know what that means? It's time for you to give us next month's assignment. What's our new assignment?
Well, as we are nearing the big eclipse, the big solar eclipse, I thought we might make this not quite solar eclipse themed, but let's go with shadow. Shadow as the next assignment.
Yeah, on the 21st, there'll be a lot of interesting shadows. If you're in the United States.
Well, I'll be back next week on the 20th, so we can talk a bit more about the eclipse.
Oh, good. Help us take pictures. That's a good idea. I always like to focus on the shadows during an eclipse because they actually, if they're like tree leaves, they'll show the eclipse.
They will.
Yeah, it's really kind of cool.
Yeah, they will.
Very
like little
nice.
Pinhole cameras.
Somebody in the chat asked an interesting question about the previous photo. Is it cropped? Is there any way to know if a photo's been cropped?
Not easily.
No, I guess if you knew what camera it was and you knew what the native resolution is, you could say, oh, that's a lower resolution. It must have been cropped. But
a photo that's been put on Flickr has already been like changed in resolution anyway, usually.
So this is one of the questions my wife asks every photographer. I'm going to ask you now. Do you crop before you process a photo or after?
Different on case by case. If I crop at all, I try
That's
to not.
That's what
crop.
I told
I
her.
To
I
get
said
the photo in I camera. Said,
pros will never admit to cropping.
No, I do. I do crop a photo if it helps. If it helps the photo, if it helps the composition, I will definitely crop. And I do not care about aspect ratios. I crop the way that feels right for the photo. But
there you go.
Most of the time, there's no crop.
Chris Marquardt, discoverthetopfloor.com. That's his website. Remember, let's all get some pictures of shadows, and we'll catch you next week. Leo Laporte, do the slide. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Joe is on the line from Covina, California. Hi, Joe.
Oh, hi, Leo.
You got your emails hacked? Oh, no, man.
Well, I don't know if it's my brother or me. Both of us have gotten email from the other person, but when you go to look, it's not from the the person that it says it's from.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty common. What's in the email?
It just says, look at this site that you might be interested in this, and it's a link.
It's spam. It could be dangerous. Shoot. It could be dangerous. Don't click that link because it could also be a link to a site with malware on it that's attempting to infect your computer. If your computer is up to date, it's probably harmless. But why take a chance?
Right, right.
So
well, I figured one of our address books is getting hacked, and I was just wondering, how do I know which address book? Right. Is it both of ours? Well,
it's not yours. It's definitely your brother.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding.
Exact same thing.
No, I'm just teasing you. Yeah. So you both got the same email. Have you gotten it more than once?
I think so. Yes. In fact, he said he's gotten it for this is like the third one from me.
Third one.
I think I've gotten two or three from him as well.
So I'm just trying to think of scenarios where that could happen. It may be. I mean, when you get an email like that, which is clearly at least spam, if not malware, the return address is never real. It's always spoofed. Now, you could, it's certainly not going to be the email address of the bad guy. So they take a name from an address book.
Right.
A lot of times what they have is a mailing list with millions of names on it. By any chance, is your brother's name alphabetically close to your name?
His first name starts with an E and mine starts with a J.
Yeah, no. I mean the email address. Like they're not similar email addresses.
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
All right. So my thinking, which is actually kind of not very solid, is that maybe your names are next to each other in a mailing list, but that wouldn't make sense because it's to him from you and then to you from him. That's a little weird. That's not, implies that whoever sent that knows there's a connection of some kind. And that's why I was thinking, I mean, maybe if your email addresses were first initial last name at gmail.com, they might have done that. But even that, most of the time, this kind of stuff, they don't take that time. They just, bam, they put a million addresses in and boosh, they send them all out at once because it's a phishing expedition. They just want one or two bytes. So Scooter X says, you guys aren't on Yahoo Mail, are you?
No,
okay.
No.
Because we've seen these kinds of weird things happen on Yahoo Mail. But it does sound like, and if you are, so what, do you both have the same email provider?
No, I use AOL, and I don't know which one is his, but it's not AOL.
It's not AOL, and it's not in the from, your brother at. It's not in there, in his address?
I haven't looked to see whether that one is the same or not.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So you haven't actually, the from email address, though, is your brother's email address, right?
No.
Oh. It just, okay, it just, how do you, so what does it say?
It just says, thought you might be interested in this, and then there's a link.
And is your brother's name at the end, or how do you? Why do you think it's from your brother?
Because it says from my brother, and then I.
But it says from your brother, but not at his email, but at some other email address.
Right.
That's interesting. Normally, the your brother part comes from your email client, which looks at the address and says, "Oh yeah, that's," and adds the name. So that's very interesting. So you're getting email. Does it say the from says your brother's full name?
Yes.
And then in brackets it has an email address.
Right, which is not his email.
And it's not his email. Now this is now completely puzzling. Your you need to look in your address book, because your address book is the thing what email program are you using?
Just webmail.
Oh, AOL. You're on your browser. So you're on AOL webmail.
Yes.
This is very interesting. So you should look in your AOL contact list and look for your brother's name and see if it's got this weird email associated with it. Because if it doesn't, I have no idea why your brother's name is showing up with a different email address.
Well, I've gotten other emails from other people that might be in my address book, but I know she's moved to Europe,
Tell me about the link in here. If somebody's suggesting, I like this, Scooter X, I like this idea. Scooter X says, whoever clicks that link in the email sends the same message out to their contacts.
I've got a number of different emails, including AOL, and how do I know which address book has been hacked?
Well, so you got that email. Somebody gets that email. A couple of people in the chat room, Scooter X, who's our moderator and Ryder Strong, say, I've had clients with exactly this exact issue. It's a hack. And the thing is, what'll happen is you get that email and you click the link. And the minute you click the link, it goes through your address book and sends the same exact email out to everybody in your address book.
Right. Well, how do I know which address book it is, though?
Well, both of you, because it went to him and you.
But is it my AOL mail or my I've got a number of different email address books, like Gmail, AOL mail. How do I know which one's been hacked?
The address that you got the email at, let's see, would be the address. No, that's the one that's in your brother's address book. It's wherever. Let me think. So you use many email addresses. It's not that understand. It's not that somebody's hacked into your account. I don't think. I'm looking at the chat room because what I'd like from you, chat room, for those of you who know this and have seen it, is if you have a web page you could send me to that we could send off to him that would tell us. I need to understand more about how this works. I do believe that that's the case, that if you click that link, the question is, does it install malware on your system, or does it merely just create an email to everybody in your address book, and that's that? So I'm trying to figure out if it's a real, in other words, if your system is now infected with something, or if it's just a one-time thing. Now, another thing, and this is a good suggestion from Dr. Mom, have you looked in the sent mail folder? Because that's how you'll know where that email came from. It should be in the sent mail folder. And by the way, if you did click that link and it sent out email to all your contacts, they would all those mails would be in the sent mail folder.
Oh, okay. Now, I have had this happen to me before, and I just changed my AOL password, and then it doesn't happen for quite a while.
Yeah, I would say that then it's time to change your AOL password again. my real concern is if it installed malware or if it's some sort of weird JavaScript hack, which is very possible, that just went, you know, did this all kind of in the browser, but is not persistent. And I'm going to have to do some research on this particular hack and see if I can figure it out. Okay. My advice would at this point be to change all your email passwords. It doesn't hurt to do that anyway.
Right. That's what I was going to do.
Yeah, I would do that. That certainly wouldn't hurt. You've said you've had this happen before.
Yes.
All right, that's interesting. So my strong suggestion to you and everybody listening is when you get links in email, do not click them. It really is a risky thing to do, and it is totally possible that all that link is a long JavaScript that goes, since you're, you know, on your browser logged into AOL, that does behind the scenes, you know, opens another tab behind your back and goes through your address book and one by one sends out that email to everybody. hoping you'll get more clicks. There's no other content to that email, though?
No.
Okay. So it's not exactly spam. Could just be, you know, a little bit of fun on the part of the hacker. I'm going to have to do some research and see if I can find what this is. In the meanwhile, absolutely change your email address. It wouldn't hurt on all your email clients. And if anybody's got has had this happen, I think we're fortunate we're coming up against a fairly long break. I can do a little research. We shall see what's going on here. You could all, yeah, good suggestion from a Russian war hero. He says, just Google the link. Paste that link into Google, minus the .com anyway, and see if anybody else reports the same thing. That's a good idea. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The link itself probably isn't a URL. Do you remember if you clicked that link or not?
Did you I never have, yeah. Because I always know that it's spam.
It's still a little bit of a mystery. Email from my brother. Click link. AOL. And your brother's not on AOL.
No, he's not.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to do some research, and I'm going to try to get some help from the people in the chat room who say that they're familiar with this hack. You're right not to click links. Be very, very careful.
Yeah.
It's an interesting, you know, you'd have to ask, well, what is the purpose of this? And it could just be, and it's not unusual, it could just be somebody, you know, having some fun, saying, I wonder if I can get people to click these links. I wonder how far this would spread if I did that. Who knows?
Well, I think it's just an advertisement.
Can you tell me what the link is?
I don't have it in front of me right now.
Is it pretty long?
Yes.
Okay. One thing to do in the browser is hover your mouse over that link and make sure that that link actually is a link. So in HTML email, in all browser mails, HTML email, you can present google.com as the link, but it really could be going to something completely different. And that would be shown in the status window on your browser. So don't click the link, but hover your mouse over it. A pop-up or a status menu will show what that full link is. If it's a long JavaScript, you know, if it's 100 words of JavaScript, then it's likely that that's actually the payload.
Oh. Okay.
Interesting. Now, I do worry about malware on your system, so it's probably a good idea to, you know, scan your system, make sure you don't have anything on it. Microsoft has a fairly good scanner built in. If you just hit Windows and type MSRT, the Windows key MSRT, and hit return and do a thorough scan, that's a helpful way to just make sure you don't have anything ugly on there. I bet you don't, though.
Okay. All right.
Hey,
well,
thanks
again.
Good question, and I'll keep listening because I'll see if I can find something. We'll also put it at techguylabs.com if I can. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and, you know, anything with a chip in it. If it's got a chip in it, I'll talk about it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We were talking before the break about, it's funny. I've been talking with my friend Winton over here who is visiting us. What's the name of your company?
Barefoot Consultants.
Barefoot Consultants. By the way, I'm picking his brain because what he does is he helps people kind of become digitally nomads, just wander the world or go somewhere or live overseas and make a living and survive. And I think it's a great idea. I love it. Anyway, I'm talking to Winton, and I realized that one of the challenges of this show is that people like our last caller have problems, but it's hard for them to describe it in the detail, a sufficient detail for me to completely diagnose it. If they could, they probably could solve it themselves, right? That's why they need to call the show. It's like, I don't understand. How did that? And then, it's hard for me because I need a little bit more information. But I'm still trying to piece this together. I am going to put a link in the show notes to a very good page on AOL's security page, how to know if your account has been hacked. And of course, one of them would be you get a message from AOL that says something's going on. They do that. And Gmail, Google will do that with Gmail. And most providers will let you know something weird's happening. But they do mention one of the things, and I would definitely look in your sent box, or sometimes it's in your draft mailbox. Look in your mailboxes, sent, drafts, or outbox. Well, in fact, look in all three. And look for mail that you didn't actually create that either is about to be sent or is sent or has been saved as a draft. Look for mail specifically with that link in it. Like, okay. That would tell you for sure that you've been hacked, right? Because the mail it's in the house. The mail is being created on your computer and sent out from your computer. That would be a sure sign that something nefarious is going on. On the other hand, conversely, if you look in those boxes and nothing, you haven't sent out any of that kind of mail, you're probably okay. I think the thing about, well, my brother got it and I got it is meaningless. I'm going to rule that out. The chances are, whoever was hacked, everybody in their address book got it. Not just if it was you, not just your brother, but everybody else you know. That's why the best place to start is in your email sent, outbox, and drafts. Look in those folders and see if you've been sending out spam like that. If you have, you've been hacked. There's also the possibility, I mean, it could be hacked in a couple of ways. It could be that somebody got your account, your password, and your login, and they're just doing it from their computer. Usually, if it were me and I were doing that, I would make sure to erase whatever's in the sent email box. So that may not be dispositive. It may not tell you anything. If you have, though, a virus or malware on your system, in that case, in most cases, you would see that mail in the sent box. You'd see other things, too. You might see email notices, bounce back notices. You might suddenly see a flood of bounce back notices. Mailer demon, could not deliver this. That would be a sign that your email account is address only is being used for spam. It's also the case that if somebody got in there, a virus or a bad guy, did all of this and then sent the mail, that he might have deleted more than just the mail he sent. Maybe he's quick and sloppy and deleted everything. If your sent box is completely empty, yeah, that's a sign something's wrong. Anyway, there's more than this in the AOL page. Very jazzy, by the way. It looks like Peter Max illustrated it. AOL's trying to be jazzy. But it has some really good tips on how warning signs of a hacked account. And I would start there. I think that's pretty good. This is not uncommon. Usually, though, when we see spam, there's, you know, an ulterior motive. There's a reason somebody goes to all this trouble. One, they want you to see an ad or go to a website. It's a way of, you know, just getting your attention. Or worse, it's malware, and that clicking that link infects your computer or something. But merely sending the same email out to a bunch of people, that's just, if somebody's doing that, they're just doing it for fun. At your expense. Sorry. They're doing it as they say. And this is how the kids talk, for the lulz. Dr. Mom is in the house. Dr. Mom, Lillian from Long Island. Good to talk to you again.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am wonderful. And congratulations. I don't know if people know this, but I can tell you're looking in the chat room. I can see you're very svelte. You've done a great job. You've been getting in shape.
Yeah, but I'll tell you something. I hate women who say, oh, it's easy, I forget to eat.
It ain't easy, is it? No.
I would kill for a bacon cheeseburger with a side of onion rings and a cold beer.
It ain't easy. Yeah. No, but you're not a physician. You know what you have to do.
Knowing what you have to do and being able to do it are not always the same thing.
Trust me, I know that one. I know it all. I've read every darn book. What can I do for you today, Lillian?
Well, I'm calling. I'm actually going to correct you. Hangouts works for text messages, SMS, and MMS, but only from Google Voice. What happened was that Google deprecated the app for your phone number that the carrier gives you.
Right. So you can't
still use it all.
You can't. Yes. You can send a message using Google Hangouts to a person or a phone.
Correct.
But it is not your SMS app. It's like WhatsApp. It's a data-based messaging app.
No,
so that's what I meant.
No. Look at your phone, the one number that I have of yours. I sent you a text message. It shows up in your text message client.
Well, for me, it does because the number you have is a Google Voice number, and it's showing up in Hangouts.
Right, but I'm just saying I use it all the time.
So this is the question: if I sent you to your physical phone number, not your Google Voice number, your physical phone number, a text message, it would show up in Hangouts?
No,
I know that's what I'm saying.
But Google, you said Google Voice didn't work anymore in Hangouts. It does. You can use Google Voice text messages with Hangouts.
Right. Thank you for the correction. I appreciate it. That's exactly what I said. Larry on the line from Las Vegas. Hi, Larry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. A quick question on the first hour topic.
Yes,
Facebook.
Sir. Yes.
I'm new to using the messaging system. And I know I call the Philippines quite a bit, and I started using the phone icon in the upper corner to make calls there. And I wanted to make sure that I wasn't getting a check here later on. No.
So this is related to Lillian's call. We're in this kind of strange period now where phone calls and SMS messages, which were over the phone system, are slowly being replaced by data and LTE data. So Facebook Messenger, when it makes a phone call, same with Google Hangouts, Skype, or any of this, doesn't use the telephone system. It uses the data system.
Oh, okay.
And you're paying for the data whatever you've arranged with your company, you know, if you pay by the byte, then you're paying for it. Most people have an unlimited or a big packet of data. It comes out of that. Okay. You will never get a bill for the phone call like the old days.
Okay.
Yeah. So Messenger, when you're using Messenger, it's a data-only program.
Okay, so I should check with my provider and on the cell phone.
Yeah, I mean, if you probably have a plan, just look at your plan that allows you a certain amount of data and so forth.
Okay.
Phone calls, audio-based phone calls, don't use very much data.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Hey, my pleasure. That's one of the reasons you're seeing this kind of explosion of WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger and all these messaging programs. Skype, too, is now that you can not only do text-based messaging, but you could do audio and video messaging. That's fantastic. You know, if you're on Wi-Fi, if you're at home, it doesn't cost you anything at all. Actually, Facebook's an interesting – Messenger's an interesting thing because Google does allow them to be your SMS program on your Android phone, oddly enough. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I don't have a text message from you, Dr. Mom. On my phone.
How's that kitchen?
I think we're crossed wires. We're saying the same thing, but it crossed. Maybe, and I didn't express it well. What Google did is they stopped supporting using Hangouts as your SMS app. You can send via data to a phone a message, but it's not using the SMS system anymore. And somebody can send you a message via data to your phone, but it's not using the SMS system. Google Hangouts, for reasons I will never understand, cannot be used as your native SMS messenger anymore. Never could on an iPhone anyway. That Apple doesn't let anybody do that but Apple. But on Android phones, they deprecated it. It has something to do with Google Voice. I think we're saying the same thing. I agree. You can send a message to a phone from Hangouts. It's not using SMS. You SMS to iMessage from Hangouts all the time. That's right. Using data. I do too. I'm not saying you can't do that. I'm saying it's not using the SMS system anymore. You're using data. You're probably going to a gateway on the phone company. So when I use Hangouts to contact Lisa and it shows up in her iMessage, it's because my Hangouts sent it to the data portal at her carrier at Verizon or T-Mobile, and T-Mobile put it in her phone box. That's the difference. It's not using SMS. And if you're in Project Fi, you can do it. See, this is what I'm talking about. So SMS support for Hangouts officially ends today. Oh, excluding, I get it, Google Voice and Project Fry subscribers. Okay, I get what you're saying. You can use it from Google Voice if you're a Google Voice subscriber. All right, you're right. I stand corrected. I will correct it. I want to find the actual Google page. So if you're using, you can use voice, but that's data.
It's a tough computer science problem.
It's a tough computer. It's still data. That's all I'm saying. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. All right, I understood. I've talked with Lillian. I understand now what she was saying. Yes, you can use, just to be clear, if you're a Google Fi or Google Voice customer, you can still use Hangouts to send text messages. I don't know about Fi, but in the case of Google Voice, you're using data to send those text messages. You're not using the SMS system. If you are not a Google Voice or Google Fi user, Hangouts no longer does text messaging. And if you're doing text messaging as a Google Voice user, that text message is coming from your Google Voice number, not from your phone number. I'm confused. But this is Google. Welcome. Thank you, Google, for really making a hash of all of this. I think we got it right. I think so. So we've gone back and forth. I think we've narrowed down the terminology. Michael in Dublin, Ireland. Hello, Michael.
Michael, it's not Dublin, Leo. It's Wexford.
Wexford. I apologize. It's, well, there's a big difference, is there?
Well, not a big difference, but I'm down in the southeast of Ireland.
Very nice. Great to talk to you. Thank you for calling.
No, Leo, I'm delighted to call. I've been a big fan for 3 or 4 years now, and I love listening to Leo and Twit, and so I think you're just brilliant. Thanks very much, anyway, for your help over the years.
Thank you. And he's not calling me a twit. He's saying he listens to our podcast network, which is This Week in Tech, but that happens.
Exactly.
Yeah. People often email, especially from the UK, saying, you know what a twit is? And I said, yes, I know what a twit is.
Yeah, well, we say the same in Ireland, but so I don't buy your T-shirts, Leo.
Oh, thank you.
For that reason, I couldn't go around Ireland with a T-shirt with a big TWI.
No, you go into the pub and they say, oh, Michael, you're a twit.
Exactly, yeah. Leo.
Yes, sir.
I have two quick comments and two quick questions, if you don't mind.
Yes.
First comment is, I rang you back about 6 months ago and I made fun of your attempt to do an Irish accent.
Oh, gosh, thank you. Because I apologize to you and all the Irish people.
You know what happened? No, Leo, I was on the phone too long and I was drinking glasses of wine, but kind of merry. So, no, you do a far better Irish accent than I do an American accent.
It's embarrassing all around, and I apologize, and thank you, Michael. You weren't drinking Guinness, though? I'm shocked.
No, I wasn't that night.
Okay.
Leo, my second comment is, and I love what you say about Chromebooks. I'm same age as your president, and I'm still working in IT support for schools, and your Chromebook push is absolutely spot on. I have installed a few schools that I do have asked me to dump XP computers, and I put on Ubuntu on them, and yes, I'm delighted with them.
Interesting. Absolutely, so delighted. You're using them, but not as a Chrome OS device. You're actually using them as a Linux device.
Yes, but I'm putting on the the
crouton,
the Chrome.
You're using crouton.
What is it?
Crouton.
No, not crouton.
Cronut.
The open. What is it called, Leo?
I can't remember. I thought it was crouton. It's the thing that makes Chromium. Oh, the Chromium browser.
Yeah. Something, Leo.
So Chromium is the open source version that is essentially the base for Google's Chrome browser, and there are very few differences between them, frankly. I use Chromium as well.
Yeah, exactly, and they can use their Google account and everything, and it's absolutely brilliant, Leo, for old computers, XP computers.
I wish they would make make it possible to put Chrome OS on those computers, but they really don't. So you're doing the next best thing, which, and I bet you lock it down so they can't really do it too much except use Chromium.
Exactly, and as well as that, in Lubuntu, they have the software center and the amount of school stuff on that, Leo, is absolutely incredible.
That's Ubuntu. We've talked about before is the most popular version of Linux. It's actually a company created by a .com millionaire named Mark Shuttleworth, who's really great. He's done a great job of this, and there are variants. And Lubuntu, or Lubuntu, as you say. Is designed for, it's lightweight, Ubuntu. It's great that they have it designed for education. That's fantastic.
Absolutely. Two quick, short questions, Leo.
Yes.
I took your advice about 4 years ago, and I actually had to travel up to the north of Ireland to buy a Nexus 5 phone. And that died eventually, and I did an awful lot of research, and I bought a Xiaomi Mi 5 high-end phone.
Oh, very nice.
And very nice, but I sat on it recently. Now, it's still working. But, Leo, like, I've been looking at my use of the phone, and I use it to listen to your podcasts and other podcasts and to make texts and phones. I rarely take photographs. So I was looking at the budget. I want to buy myself a new phone. The HTC... it's the HTC One X9.
It's nice.
It's 2015, Leo. I know it's a year and a half.
I can recommend a better phone for you at a budget price that's more modern. This is the issue with all Android devices, getting the latest Android on it, right? So it's not that the hardware is old or bad, but there are, you know, if it's not getting its updates anymore, and I don't think it is... then you're not going to have a completely secure phone. So is your budget, you want about $100. I don't know what that would be.
No, Leo, I'm not exactly stuck for budget, but I just don't want to pay $500-$600.
Yeah, I understand that.
For a phone that I don't use, you know.
So I would look at a Motorola.
Budget.
I would look at the Motorola G5. Which is...
Actually, I heard you talking about that before, yeah.
Excellent phone. It doesn't, where the only thing wrong with it is it doesn't have the best camera. It has a decent camera. It's less expensive. It's also made by a Chinese company, Lenovo, but they're still heavily influenced by the design and engineers in Chicago at the old Motorola folks. And I think they've just made a fabulous phone. It's certainly in the Xiaomi ballpark. You know, I would also look at a Huawei Mate 4 if you want. Do you want a big screen?
I'd like a 5.5-inch anyway. Yeah.
Okay, so that may be that then what is it? It's the Mate from Huawei, and I'm right. I think that that's a pretty big Huawei. I know it's hard to the Mate 9.
Yeah, I know the Huawei. Yeah,
Mate 9. They have actually a pretty good camera. They worked with Leica to make their camera. But I think that is a 5.5-inch screen. It's a beautiful phone. It has a big battery. I bet your battery life is important to you, right?
Oh, it is, yeah.
Yeah. More than the camera, even. And actually, it has, I think, a pretty good camera. They are, I believe, going to keep it up to date. That's always a question mark with all of these guys. It has a fingerprint sensor, which I think is important. It makes it easy to unlock. It also makes it more secure. So there's a couple I would look at. Certainly the Motorola G5 is a low-cost leader. And if you want a bigger screen, maybe a little higher-end phone, the Huawei Mate 9. Nice to talk to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm listening as you talk, trying to memorize your accent so that from now on, if you hear me doing a bad Irish accent, it'll be you, Michael.
No, Leo. Your accent is an awful lot better than my American one. So,
yours is beautiful. No, it's. I'm sure you know this, but Americans love Irish accents. We just love them, and yours is beautiful. It's lilting. I think of James. I hear James Joyce. I hear the Irish Rovers. It's such a beautiful, beautiful sound. So, I'm so glad that you listened.
Leo, I was a fan up to now, and I'd be a fan forever after that. Okay, thanks very much.
Bless you.
Leo.
Thank you. Take care, Michael.
See you, Leo. Bye.
Oh, I love that voice. We've had calls from Holland, Canada, and Ireland today. And I think he thought I was saying UK was Ireland. I know it's not. Yes, right. So he's from the Republic of Ireland. Different. Yeah, yeah.
He was in Wexford or Waterford.
Wexford, he said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My biggest strategic partner is in Waterford.
So there's the Republic of Ireland, which is not in the UK.
Right.
And then there's, is it Northern Ireland that's in the UK?
Yeah.
But I didn't mean to say that he was in the UK. But I think it sounded like I thought that he was in the UK. Yeah, I always have to practice that one. It is a pretty language, isn't it?
Yeah.
We had an Irish priest, a grass priest, marry us. Pater, his name was. And it was so beautiful because he had that beautiful Irish accent. I just loved it.
Well, the female Irish voice is considered the most credible in advertising.
Oh, I would, yeah, and I like it too. Yeah, Irish Spring. Winston's saying the female Irish voice is the most credible in ever. You wouldn't imagine a female Irish voice would ever lie to you.
Right.
Of course she wouldn't. Oh, and I like it too. Irish Spring. That's where there's two places Americans get their Irish accent. One is that Irish Spring commercial, and the other is Lucky Charms.
Right.
Oh, raspberry red, yellow. And I like it too. Oh, Lordy above. Northern Ireland's in the UK. It's not in Great Britain. The Republic of Ireland is a separate country, and they still use the euro, right? I was going to say, I don't know what it is in euros, and I wasn't sure. Is it pounds? No, it's euros, because they're the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah, I tried to cash an Irish euro in London last year, and they looked at me like I was...
Oh, they won't take it. Well, they don't like... Yeah, right. Yeah, the Mate 9 is 5.9 inches. It's a big screen, Michael. Really nice big screen. I hear very good things about that. I haven't tried either the Huawei or the Xiaomi phones. They're hard to get here. The 49ers hired a girl coach. You know, it was great. I was listening to preseason game last night, the Raiders game, and they had a female play-by-play announcer for the NFL. She was local. It was Channel 2, but I still was very... And she was good. So I hope she gets a shot at the network. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that's a big breakthrough.
Yeah. Huge. Really good, too. She was very, very good, I thought. Let me see... And she wasn't doing color. She was doing the play-by-play. She did a great job. Beth Mowins,
wow.
The first woman to do play-by-play for a regular season game since 1987. Oh, that's not... That's Monday Night... She's going to do Monday Night Football, two games. No, one game in September. She'll be the first woman ever to do that. I don't know if that's who I heard. She was good, though. I was impressed. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, that's the band Paul McCartney was with before the Beatles. No, that's not it. Leo, I actually like the Monkees. I really do. They were a great band. I think that they got a bad break because everybody, they're a TV band. They're fake. They're the fake Beatles. But they actually were really good, and they had great songs, not written by the Monkees, but by some of the best Tin Pan Alley songwriters of the time. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk high tech. And no more hangouts in SMS. We're done. I'll talk about anything else, but no more of that. Kyle on the line from Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Kyle.
Hi. I got a Google Pixel phone, and I was wondering, it's on the Project Fi network. When's it going to be updated to the Android O version?
It should have been already. Yours is not updated to O? Not Nougat, but whatever O is. You mean the next gen? Yeah, it's not come out yet. So you can be part of the beta program. I'm pretty sure Android O has a beta program. Let me just see how you get on that. I put it on one of my Pixel phones. So I know you can. I think you have to go to, let's see, it supports the Pixel, the Nexus 6P, 5X, the Pixel C. So all of the recent stuff, you have to go to the Android. Do this on your phone, by the way. And I did this recently. Go to the Android developer or beta program portal, which is google.com/Android beta. And you'll opt in. You'll sign into your account first. Make sure you use the account that's associated with the phone, obviously. And you'll sign in, and then it'll show you a list of devices that are eligible. Your Pixel should show up there because it's eligible. You enroll it. Once you enroll it, you sit back, and it, for me, it happened in about 30 seconds. It said, okay, you've got an update, just like a regular over-the-air update, except the update is for Android O. And I have to say, it works quite well on my Pixel.
It's still in beta form, isn't it?
It is not. That's why you haven't got pushed it. You have to opt into a beta, but it'll be out. I think they said September or October. It'll be out when they announce the new Pixels, probably.
Okay.
All right. Now, here's the question. Can you go back? What if you hate this? So, if you want to leave the beta program, you go back to the Android beta program page and you unenroll, and then you will get an update. This is very nice. Apple never does this. You cannot go backwards once you update an iPhone. But Google will let you roll back to Android Nougat 7.1.2, the current version, with an over-the-air update. However, and this is the warning, if you do that, it will push it out to you, but then it'll reboot and your stuff will be gone. It'll wipe your phone. It does have to do that. So you can easily get back to your old version of Android, but only by wiping the phone, starting all over again. We don't know what O... Now, something in the chat room is saying O is rumored to be released in the next couple of weeks. That could be. September. I think I said September. As early as September, as late as October. Apparently, EvLeaks, who's one of the big Twitter rumor guys, according to Scooter X, tweeted, Android O release scheduled for the week of August 21st, which would be soon. O could be the eclipse. They haven't yet said what O will stand for. You know, every Google Android code name is a dessert. It was cupcake. There was no A and B, or there was, but they didn't announce it. There was cupcake, donut. Let's see if I can do it. Well, CDE. Cupcake, donut, eclair. Froyo was F. G was gingerbread. H. Oh, what was H? Honeycomb. Thank you. From the peanut gallery. I. What was I? Icicle, ice cream, ice cream soda. Ay. I can't remember I. Anybody? I. Bueller? I. Oh, Henry, ice cream sandwich. Right. J was, Jelly Bean. K was Kit Kat. We didn't like that because it was a brand name. But, you know, Kit Kat is the only one. L was lollipop. M was marshmallow. N, the current one, is nougat. I'm getting diabetes just telling you the names here. It's like crazy. So, will it be a dessert? It's so far, it's been desserts. Will it be Oreo? That would be the obvious one, but it's a brand name. They didn't, you know, there was some upset. Not upset, but people were, okay, it was me. I didn't like giving a plug to Kit Kat bars every time I mentioned the Android code name. Oreo would make sense. But I think if they do release it on August 21st during the eclipse, that big O, wow. Now I'm thinking maybe it won't be a dessert at all. Maybe it'll be eclipse. No, that wouldn't make any sense. Oh, what do you think? Orange sherbet? No. Nobody even knows. No. Orange push-up. Yeah, sure. I don't know. What do you think? 8888, ask Leo. Next, Jane from Manhattan Beach. Hello, Jane. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Hello, Jane.
This is somewhat of an earlier question or topic on what app. Is it WhatsApp or what app? Well, that's okay.
It's WhatsApp. Get it? Because it's like you say, what's up? WhatsApp. Uh-huh. What's up?
Okay.
Get it?
Oh,
get
got
it?
It.
What? Yeah.
Yes.
What's up? What's up? That's dopey. Got I know. It. It's dopey. You know what? When people start a company and they create a product. They have no idea if it's going to be success. So sometimes they go with something that's dopey, and then 3 years later, that's Google. Google's like a goo-goo-goo-goo-gaga. It's like a baby word. But we're used to it now. WhatsApp. Anyway, yes, what about WhatsApp?
Well, one, I do not have a smartphone. So, yeah, I know. So I was considering, I already have Skype on my MacBook. And was going to call someone in India, and they said, call on WhatsApp. So I looked into the WhatsApp, and what they want is access to my phone list.
And there's here's what goes on. Yeah. WhatsApp identifies you not by your name, but by your phone number. So when you sign up for WhatsApp, it'll say, well, okay, what's your phone number? And then they send you a text, and that validates that that's your phone number, and that's you. That's your identifier, is your phone number, which makes sense because your phone number is unique. You know, your name, Jane, with your last name may not be – it's certainly not unique. I bet you there are other Janes out there. But your phone number is unique, so that's why they use it. They ask for your contact list, but you can say no. And I'll tell you why they ask. They're not going to call your friends. But what they want to do is – what they will almost certainly do is upload your contact list to their servers. And then when somebody that's on your list signs up for WhatsApp, they send you a note saying, hey, your buddy Fred just signed up. Would you like to add him to your contacts?
And my answer would be
no.
No.
But you can say, I don't want you to upload – you can say no to that. It will not break WhatsApp. They don't have to have access to your contacts. They say,
this is
a convenience to you, Jane. But really, of course, you're right to be suspicious because it's owned by Facebook. What they're doing is adding all of that data to their big old database of everything they know about Jane, and then they're cross-referencing.
And that to me is terrible.
Yeah, I don't blame you. But the good news is you can say no.
Right page.
Yeah, you can say no. Now the question is, how are you going to get WhatsApp working without a phone number?
Okay.
So. There, you have to trick it. You have to use a program that gives you a phone number. By the way, the Google Voice that we've been talking about, that's one way to do it. That's a free service, voice.google.com. And if you already have a Google account, you can sign up for it very easily. Even if you don't, you can sign up for it easily. It'll give you a phone number. Then you tell WhatsApp that's your phone number. And then it'll call you or it'll send you a text message and you're good to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. They're also – actually, you know what? I may have misspoken because now that I think about it, I think WhatsApp refuses to send me text validation on my Google Voice number. I think it doesn't like Google Voice. So, but there are other programs like Google Voice that will let you do that. There's these are all – let's see. But you can't – I can't get it can't be a smartphone app, can it? It has to be something you run – on your
desktop.
It'll
work on my MacBook.
Work on your MacBook.
Yeah.
So I see, there's, I think Mighty Text might be one that will do it. What you need is there are apps that will work on your MacBook that act like text messaging apps. Here's one. Call Alice. These are all apps, which is really frustrating. Because what we're trying to do is set up WhatsApp without a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
So Text Now, that's an app. Here we go. Using an existing landline. Okay. So open WhatsApp on your phone, tablet, or PC. You can run WhatsApp on your computer, by the way. I think you figured that out. Otherwise, you wouldn't want it. And then use your home phone number. And then when prompted, it'll say send a text or – actually, I guess what you do is you send the text and it fails. I remember this happening. It sends it – you say, okay, yeah, send me a text. And, of course, it's a home number. It doesn't take text. So 5 minutes later, it'll say, that didn't work. You want us to call you? And you say, yes, please.
Okay.
And that'll activate it. And then your WhatsApp account will be associated with that home phone number.
Okay. I'm making notes.
That was a long way to go. Well, I'll put a link in the show notes to this.
Oh, wonderful. That's just what I need. Okay.
And you know, you're going to love it because it gives you free phone calls and free messaging, and you can do it from your computer, and people won't know you don't have a smartphone.
Great.
You'll fool everyone.
Yes. That's great. Thank you.
Nice to talk to you.
Need.
Thanks, Jane. Take care.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Happy holiday. Bye-bye.
Did she say happy holiday? What holiday is it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Happy International Left-Handers Day to all my fellow Southpaws. Today, just because it's your day, let's drive on the left side of the road. What do you say? Nope, bad idea. Unless you're in Ireland or England or 8888 ask Leo. We are going to keep answering phones after the top of the hour. So when the show goes off the air, don't worry. The calls will continue. I'm going to answer as many phone calls as I can for the next hour. So keep the calls coming. It's actually the best time to call if you have a hard time getting through. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and on the line from Los Angeles, Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Leo. I have a question from the past.
Yes, I'm looking at the call screener's notes. I can't believe this. Go ahead.
Okay, so you remember Word for DOS?
Do I remember it? Yes, of course. Okay. I do. Yes.
So it had style sheets for formatting.
Yep. It came with a mouse. The first mouse ever.
Really?
Microsoft made a mouse for DOS.
I beat it into shape for writing screenplays once upon a time.
That's right. That's
it had
right.
all the formatting.
Because you had a style sheet for the exact formatting, yeah.
With all the capitalization and the indents and all the rest of it on the style sheet. Now, I'm trying to figure out a way to print said document, and I can't get there. If I open Word for DOS,
that's command
prompt, you know, it's printing to LPT1, or I don't even know what to do with
that.
And
it's coming out as plain text? You're not getting the
format? The only thing I have, you know, it'll load into Word for DOS, fine. It looks great on the screen. It's got the style sheet attached, and it works. But I can't figure any way to print it. And the only other thing I have is a rich text file, which is just all lowercase, all jammed together, pages and pages, with no formatting at all. So what do you think?
I understand what's going on here. So when you print in DOS, unfortunately, it's kind of primitive. If you go back to those days, DOS, for people who are wondering, what the hell are they talking about? Before there were windows and menus, kids, in the earliest days of computing, we had a command line, and that's it. We didn't have mice. We didn't have windows. We didn't have menus. We just had a command line, and you'd type WORD and hit return, and your screen would fill up with text that would be a word processor. There was Microsoft Word before that, of course, WordPerfect, the famous WordStar. There were the electric pencil. There were a lot of weird programs out there. The problem is you're using a computer today to print to a modern printer. The modern printer just sees a stream of letters.
Right. I can't even figure out how to print out of Word for DOS. I can open it, you know.
Yeah, so you're printing the file just directly from DOS. Well, that's really not going to work. You're getting other stuff besides the text, right? You're getting formatting and stuff in there.
Not getting anything. I'm just getting a string of
garbage
words.
Yeah, it's all garbage. It's not formatted.
Put together I'd have to go through it manually and reformat the
entire. Normally, like if you print in Windows, what happens is in Windows, it renders a document. It doesn't actually print the text at all. It just renders a document in Windows and then spools the picture, in effect, out to the printer.
Huh.
There are printers, though, that use languages like, PostScript's the best known, but HP printers use PCL. They had their own language, so they could take a stream of characters and render it in the printer. They had enough memory and processor to actually do that. The problem with that is printers were more expensive then, and it was a slower process. So in order to speed things up, that's when you've seen this print spooler. That's what your print spooler is essentially doing.
Right.
Windows renders the document and then dribs it out to the dumb printer, which no longer is capable of doing any formatting, and the dumb printer prints it. So if you take one of those modern dumb printers and print to it from your DOS, it's going to say, this is what I'm getting. And it's going to print what you get, which is not right.
I can't even figure out how to print it from DOS, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Well, you can. You can copy con to LPT1. but it, or copy file name to LPT. You can copy it to LPT1, but it's not going to be happy, and it's going to waste a lot of paper. So don't do it.
All right. And if I open it in regular Word,
this is the trick. You've got what you. So you still you do have Windows, and you have Word for Windows.
I have Word for Windows, and I have Word for DOS.
So these are scripts you wrote long ago, and you just want to print them out now.
Exactly.
Got it. So the trick is going to be to import them into modern Windows.
With the formatting intact.
With the formatting. And so when you do an import, it doesn't preserve the formatting?
No, it doesn't. At least I can't figure out how to make that happen. It's just a string of text, unformatted, uncapitalized, un-everything. Just...
Yeah, the style sheet is not getting imported.
Right, exactly.
So, there must be a way for Word, for Windows, more modern Word, to import that file and the style sheets.
Boy, that would be good if it could.
In such a way that you can, it'll render it. That's what you need.
That's what I need.
Yeah, no, and so the chat room saying, oh, you should just be able to import it. Well, you can't. He tried. But there may be a different import command. So what you're going to need to do, and I'll do a little research too. I can't do it right now, obviously, but I'll do a little research too. There will be a way. Microsoft will have a technical document somewhere on importing Word 1.0 documents into Microsoft Office in a way that you can get the formatting. I'm sure there'll be a way to do it.
Boy, I hope so.
Yeah. Some people are saying, and this might actually work, is to use Microsoft Works as an intermediate. Because remember, Works came out earlier. It was a simple program, and it does, in fact, maybe import Microsoft. The question is, where would you get Works, right? I don't know.
I've never used or owned or anything.
Yeah.
I don't have access. I maybe could find it somewhere. That's a Windows program or a DOS?
Yeah, well, it's both. And if you could download Microsoft Works, you could that may be because it's kind of a bridge because it's, you know, that came out in 1998 or something or 7 or 5 or, you know, early on where people were still had Word 1.0 documents that they were trying to import. I'll have to look. I mean, you may just be simple enough to Google, and I'm going to do that right now, importing Word 1.0 documents. Is it 1.0? It probably is, right?
I don't remember what version it was. It was definitely Word for DOS, but I don't know a version number. But, you know, it opened up with it didn't have a white background. It was colored text on some.
Oh, yeah.
And it's from way back. I mean, back when I had a 40 megabyte, was it, hard drive? And I thought,
yeah, that's
the biggest thing in the
that
world.
Was big, boy. In those days, that was really big.
I know.
There are third-party converters out there, and the chat room is sending me to a website by Graham Mayer, helping to ease the lives of Microsoft Word users. That's what we need. And he makes a converter. I would look and see if he has a converter for the early version of Word to the latest version of Word. It's not a hard thing to do. It's not hard at all. You just have to understand those files and, more importantly, the style sheet and apply it. And you'd think Microsoft would have just, you know, hey, as long as you're making Microsoft Word, you probably should include that. We will look and we will find something for you. Keep an eye peeled at techguylabs.com, okay? And I will not rest till we find a way to do that. Do you think you can sell those scripts? Is there a market for
them? Well, I don't know. It's more for other reasons that I wanted to get a hard copy.
Yes.
And
well, you see the reason right now. See, hard copy, 1,000 years from now, somebody will be able to read that.
Exactly.
You can't even read Microsoft Word 1.0 files 20 years later.
Yeah, you can barely read
it. I mean, get it on hard copy now. Yeah. That's exactly right.
So I would just like to get something for archive purposes, if nothing else.
Right. No, that's the right thing to do. I keep listening when the show's over, but I will do some research. I'll find that. That bugs me. I want to be able to do that. That seems like something that somebody's doing that. Thanks to all of you. Have a great Geek Week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. See you next time. There's a program from Microsoft Wow. And it's on an FTP server. I love that. We might have found the answer.
Thinking about life insurance.
We might have found the answer. Are you still there?
I'm here.
WDSUPCNV.exe.
C like Charlie, NV?
Yeah. It's for convert. Word support convert or words up convert. Where Gollum, it's at justsolve.archivestream. Wow. This is obscure, but it looks like it's exactly what it is. It's not from Microsoft, but what it does is it supports Word 1 and Word 2. Oh, Word for DOS predates Word 1. Interesting.
That's probably what it is.
Opening Word for DOS files in modern Microsoft Word. Word for DOS files can't be opened natively with current versions of Microsoft Word anymore. Well, yeah. However, it's possible to import such old Word files with an additional converter for Word, which you do get from Microsoft, but it's on a FTP server. Wow. And this has the instructions. So I am going to put this link in the show notes at techguylabs.com. James, if you could put that up there as quickly as possible so that Mike can go and download this file. And it gives you the step-by-step. You run the file, copy all the resulting CNV files, most importantly, DOSWord32.cnv to program files. Wow, it's complicated. It's yes, complicated. But it looks like what this does is it enhances Microsoft Word.
Does it look as if it grabs the style sheet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, style sheet, not found, press OK, file selector, and then you find the style sheet. This looks like it'll do it.
Oh, boy.
Wow, we might have found the answer.
Well, that would be cool. I Googled that a bunch, and I never got anywhere.
So well, the chat room has ways, my friend. So this is the phrase to Google. I mean, I think this would work. Opening Word for DOS files in modern Microsoft Word. Let's see if I Google that, if it's going to pop up. Well, it doesn't, but I see others do. It looks like actually it does pop up. It's the first result. So if you're in a hurry and you don't want to wait till we get this in the show notes, Google opening Word for DOS files in a modern Microsoft Word. Now, and the thing is, I trust this because you're downloading this file directly from Microsoft. So it is not some weird somebody's third party program.
I tried looking around Microsoft, and I didn't come up with anything.
Yeah, no. Obviously, if they put this on an FTP server, they probably don't even know it's still there. That's pretty typical, right? They don't, you know, it's too bad.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Well, thank you. Let me ask you one other question.
Wait a minute. Let me just check there's one other thing though. Oh, if this doesn't work, you might have to go somewhere else to find that pro. Yeah, I think I should have checked this. Maybe that link is dead. But at least we know there is a program, WDSUP convert, if we can find it. Okay, wait, what else?
Okay, this is totally ridiculous. But since I've upgraded, quote unquote, to Windows 10, which really I'm sort of sorry about, but that's in the. I don't know why they just didn't keep improving XP and stop.
Well, I think they would argue that's kind of what they've done. They just named it differently, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
It's really bad now. I don't. Really,
they went through a bad period where they thought everybody was going to be using tablets.
Yeah, and I don't even have a touchscreen on my desktop.
Right.
Anyway, but so what they did is took my free. Paid for Windows, which had FreeCell in it, and now they've turned it into an ad machine. And I feel like that's a cheat.
That's right.
The functionality that
they
I've
took it out.
For.
They took out a bunch of stuff. Yeah.
And now they're. Do you know any way around that?
No, that's Microsoft does that from time to time. They yank programs in the update.
So there should be a class action here.
Well,
I have paid for functionality that they've taken away.
If you paid for it, maybe, yeah.
Anyway, That's just
now I'm feeling bad because I'm looking and it turns out, oh, you go, Vault, that Microsoft is no longer offering that file. That site is down. There may be another place to find it. We're just going to have to keep looking. It's encouraging that such a thing existed.
Yeah.
And it's doing exactly what it needed to do, which is get the main doc file, but then also get the style sheet file.
Right.
Exactly. And merge them together.
I don't know why Microsoft would not keep stuff available for back converting. I don't get that. But they've done things many times that I don't understand.
Let me see. Somebody's saying I should right-click and save as. Does that work now? I think it's just not responding. Darg Nargit. I'm going to keep looking. I'm not giving up. We'll find an answer.
Great. So I'll take a look at the show.
What's the name? Give me one name of one movie.
For what?
For your scripts.
Oh, it's called Cracker Jack and Jill.
I like it. Cracker Jack and Jill. Who knows? That could be it.
Yeah,
you
never know. I do want to keep a copy of it on paper.
We got a lot of Hollywood types listening. Here's your chance. Option at a low, low price today. Yeah. Cracker Jack and Jill.
Really, there's your shot.
Great to talk to you, Mike.
All right. Thanks very much.
Take care. My pleasure. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.